I just learned that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age, meaning, depending on lifestyle habits, someone can either accelerate or decelerate the aging process. But just where do you stack up? That's where True Diagnostic comes in. With their True Age test, you can discover your biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. I just completed my True Age test, and I'm super excited to see what it reveals about my health. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off their entire order at TrueDiagnostic.com by using the code Harris at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TrueDiagnostic.com. Just use the code HARRIS to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today. If you're like me, you want to keep your personal information safe. There are many VPN companies out there to help you do this, but I'm using NordVPN, especially with their online layer and double layer VPN options, as well as their dark web monitor, which scans the dark web to see if your information is compromised in places you wouldn't normally look. NordVPN aims to make the internet a better place for everyone. Free the internet from the online threats, censorship, and surveillance whilst giving users the ability to access content which isn't available in their region. The NordVPN threat protection feature protects you from viruses, malicious malware, and phishing sites. With one NordVPN subscription, you can use this service on up to 10 devices. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/matter, matter, which will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
I'm going to probably regret making this stream of consciousness. Maybe not. I think something needs to be said, and I don't see a lot of people doing it, and I understand why. And so I want to answer some questions, make some distinctions, give you some thought-provoking questions on the online discourse concerning the Jewish question, as it's called. I noticed last weekend there were all these posts on X about the Holocaust didn't happen. Jewish people are responsible for everything that's bad. I asked the question, what is going on? Did the algorithm change? Like, this is insane. When I signed up for X, I wasn't thinking I was going to have like every other post from accounts I don't even recognize. And I think they might've fixed it. Maybe it was an algorithm thing, but regardless, there's a large group of people who are essentially ideologues on this. I mean, this is the cornerstone of their entire worldview, and it is a worldview. It's the lens by which they would look through everything. Then you got guys who are liberal ideologues. They're also ideologues, but they're, you know, for like a neutralist, more multicultural flavor. Some of them justify it under Christianity. Some of them would say they're not for multiculturalism, but their view leads to that. And any kind of in-group preference is considered racist. You need to have, universal values, and that's the Christian position or something. And they will browbeat the ideologues I previously mentioned that really are obsessed with Jewish people. They'll also browbeat people like me. They'll browbeat traditional conservatives. Anyone who wants to draw lines and say that we should have a preference for our own. And anyway, we could develop that. But I see these two kind of groups fighting. And a lot of the people that I would consider to be more reasonable don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. And I know because I'm in chat groups and in the PMs with many of them. Whenever this comes up, and it's come up for a while, like people who are fairly reasonable, even people that you would recognize who have some clout in the Christian quote unquote nationalist side of things, they just don't see that this is a prudent thing to enter from a political standpoint. I don't blame them, but the liberal ideologues browbeat them for this, that they're, you know, somehow compromisers or whatever. And, you know, whatever. It's just, okay. I have decided I am going to enter it a little bit. I'm going to dip my toe in the fray. I mean, I do have opinions that are pretty thought out and pretty, I'm not going to say I'm an expert, but I definitely have had to navigate some of the questions that I'm going to touch on years ago. It's not, this isn't a new thing for me. I'll just give you a little bit. I read Mein Kampf when I was about 18 years old. I also read the Communist Manifesto that year. I read a bunch of books that were influential in history. And I wanted to understand. I kept hearing Hitler was insane. Hitler was crazy. And you read that and you realize, oh, he's not crazy, at least in that book. And his speeches, they're not crazy. They do follow a certain logic, but he's definitely an ideologue. Every impulse is reduced down to racial self-preservation. Everything you do is about racial self-preservation somehow. So it's really no different than other totalitarian ideologies. Marxism says that it's class conflict. Feminism says it's the patriarchy. The Black Lives Matter movement thinks it's some kind of racial animus. It's always one thing that motivates all the other behavior. You're brushing your teeth, and you're doing it for a reason. It's either racial self-preservation, or it's the patriarchy, or it's class conflict, or something. It's reducible to something other than just making your teeth healthy and white. So I realized, yeah, this isn't conservative at all. But I understood why someone who felt like the honor had been stripped from their land and they had been taken over and they want to regain that. Like, I can understand totally under the conditions of the Weimar Republic why someone would be attracted to what Hitler was saying there. And Hitler is identifying some of the problems. Now, he inflated some things, but he's resonating with where people are at, what they see around them. So that said, I went to grad school. I had a graduate class in Holocaust studies, had a graduate class in World War II. We went to a number of the Holocaust museums and read a lot of books with a lot of primary sources on Holocaust accounts and all this. So I remember, we watched Nazi propaganda videos, all of that. And there's things that I could say that I don't know if it would be prudent for me to say in this video or online in general, but I think there's a lot of anti-Christian sentiment in Holocaust studies. You even go in like the National Holocaust Museum, and one of the first exhibits is basically how Christians and Martin Luther specifically, but Christians in general, really contributed to this. It's their problem. And there's a little bit about Darwinism, but there's a certain Nazi reading of Christianity and really stripping Christianity of, you remember at that time in Germany, you have the conservatives are basically neo-orthodoxy, the liberals are, they're liberals. I mean, they've bought into all the higher criticism. Excuse me. So there's really not much of a Christianity left. And it's still, though, kind of like in the Volk waters, though. It's part of the German DNA. So they use these figures, the Volk movement that preceded the Nazis, they use these figures to forward their own more social Darwinist agenda. And I went through all that, feel like I sort of had somewhat of a grasp on what happened. And we talked, a bit about the denial stuff and all that. And, I've read a lot of the guys that I see bandied about online too. Probably not all of them, but, I've read David Irving. I understand a lot of the guys who are entering this fray. I'm not trying to assert like I'm superior or anything like that. I'm just saying like, I understand more than you probably realize I understand about where you're coming from and why you're coming to those conclusions potentially, which is part of the reason I'm weighing in. And then, of course, I was a repairman for like 10 years. I went in thousands and thousands of homes, many of them Jewish. There's large Jewish populations, Hasidic populations. We also have secular Jews in my area. They are different. I saw the effects of what large group of Hasidic Jews can do when they enter a small town and take over the school board and change laws and all of that. Look up Monroe, New York, for example, and just see. I mean, the media hardly covers any of these things. But I'm well aware it's happening all of, the 17 corridor in New York. There's a lot of land being bought up right now, and a lot of people have very strong opinions. You will never see any of it in the media unless one of them steps out of line and says something that can be misconstrued or construed, as the case may be, as somehow anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic, etc. By the way, I hate the word anti-Semitic because for multiple reasons. But one of the main ones is that there's more Semites than just Jewish people. So not a very good word to use. But anyway. All right. So that's just a little bit about my background. Like I'm saying that to tell you, I'm not coming at this like as a total ignoramus, and I'm not coming at this as a liberal, which ideologues tend to blind themselves because they see one thing. But the liberals think that I'm like posturing to, I don't know, help anti-Semites or something. And then the actual people who really hate Jews and make that an obsession think that I'm kind of like with the liberals. And I think I'm actually with the majority of people, to be honest. I'm not sure if that is going to remain that way. But at this point, I think that the majority of people just don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. And can you blame them? For a political reason? Why would you? I mean, examine the threats that are in front of you right now. I woke up, I read something from an intelligence, former intelligence guy about basically there's a potential terrorism threat level that's very high right now. And the open border allowed all these terror cells in and they're planning something. All right. I was confronted with that within the first few minutes of the day. That's something that you said not to be paranoid, but hey, take caution, take precautions. That's the kind of thing that makes me not want to go to a big city, right? Like that's just one threat of many threats. And I can't address all threats, right? At the scale at which I operate, I have to look at what authority has God given me? What can I do for the people over which I have authority? And that's about it. I can't meet all the threats. So, you know, just to bang the drum about one threat in particular that even if it is a threat, I can't do anything about it. Practically speaking, why really enter that? Why make that a priority? So you have to do a triage. And a lot of, I think, very reasonable guys who legitimately see, okay, yeah, there's definitely threats from various groups that have come to the United States. And certainly a group of people that are high achievers with a strong in-group preference who do not have Christian values, that's going to be a problem for traditional Americans who want Christian values. That's like, obviously, right? You can see that in Hollywood. You can see that in the porn industry. You can see that in various ways. So there's a lot of guys believe this, but why are they going to go enter that? Why are they going to go, what's the solution is what I'm trying to say. What's the end game here? What do they expect to be done about it? And there's a growing group of guys on X who seem like they just want a final solution to all this. They admire Hitler. They think the Nazis were good and that'll take care of our problems or something, which, but you know, spoiler alert, it won't, but that's what they think. Like it almost becomes like the original sin is Jewish people or something. Now, like I said, I've grown up in an area where, yeah, there's large populations of, I mean, I didn't really interact with a lot of Jewish people, but there was more, I mean, they kind of keep to themselves, at least the Hasidics. But when I was a repairman, I was in their houses. I saw how they acted. I saw how they treated me. I know very well how they live and all of that. And I understand some of the concerns that people have, especially in the local area, about people who've been there for generations and they see their town in their minds taken away from them. I understand all that. But I also saw people convert. I saw people become Christians from Judaism. I have good friends who are converts or their parents were, and they just grew up in Christianity and really no different than you or I, as far as the way they live, their culture is very similar. Maybe some of them still do like, Hanukkah or something, but it's, you know, you wouldn't even, you can say all the Christian nationalist things you want to say, it's not going to offend them. So you can see that as well. And, when you just draw like a very rigid line and say, well, this is what all Jews are like, it's in their nature, which I'm quoting someone there who's been fairly influential in this whole discourse. It's just in their nature, Jewish people, they're subversive, they're liars, they try to trick you, they're dirty people, all these negative things that are attached to them. And you may not think it, but just wait, you'll see. No, that person doesn't know what they're talking about. Here's what I want to say. You have to make a distinction between the guys who recognize that, yes, There were immigration policies years ago, by the way, without Jewish people even pulling the strings. We're not talking about Hart Sellers, even that, most Gentiles who got that across the finish line. But before that, people who allowed all kinds of people in during the Ellis Island years, there were all kinds of things that happened that have led to the situation we are in now, with large populations of mainly Eastern European Ashkenazi Jews, because there's a difference between them and the Sephardic Jews who came here during the early part of America. Big difference. Most people don't know that either. There's a good documentary, This Happy Land. Go watch it. Anyway, a large number of them came from the pogroms. And at the same time, you have a lot of, you know, people from Southern Europe and Irish and so forth coming over. And these people brought their cultures with them. If you read like Albion Seed by David Hackett Fisher, he talks about the original settlers and the four British folkways that made America what it is. Well, the whole premise is that you step on American soil, you're not just an American. It doesn't change everything about you. You bring with you the things that you had in your home country. And the same thing happens with immigrants. They bring the things with them. Some of those things can be beneficial in some ways, but if you do it at too high of a volume, if the scale is too big and the difference is too much, especially if they don't speak the same language and hold to the same similar religion or something, you start weakening your own culture. That's the concern that traditional conservatives have. You start weakening your own culture, and especially if you bring very high performance people who have strong in-group preferences, they are going to become part of the ruling class. And they're going to foist their vision on you because they're going to use power whether you want it or not. This is a problem. This is a problem. And it's not just Jewish people who are part of these problems. There are other industries that are controlled by other immigrant groups that where the industry has changed, not always for the better, because of people bringing their own ways of life with them. You have to be very careful. Culture is very delicate. You add foreign elements into it and you do it at high numbers, they won't assimilate. They will just become their own thing, which is the problem we have in the United States today. And it's a big problem. And some groups are more able to assimilate than other groups. So all of these dynamics are at work, and it is complicated to some extent. But there's guys who recognize these things. They know patterns. They can see in certain industries I'll use Hollywood as an example. They can see that a lot of Jewish people have an outsized influence in Hollywood. And that does seem to reflect kind of an anti-Christian sentiment. And you would expect that with secular Jewish people, writing the screenplays and directing and these kinds of things. So are those people, are they, if they're not loud enough about this question, if they're not ideologically rigid enough and just they don't really blame Jews for every problem, if they still think the Holocaust happened, which by the way, it did, guys, it's an insane historical position to say that did not happen, then they are somehow compromised. And no, that's not the case. They understand, though, their political reality. Even what I've said in this video could get me in super hot water. And I don't think I've said anything that's unreasonable or that egregious. I'm just saying, yeah, there are things to consider. But what is the application of all this? What am I supposed to do? Okay, so Hollywood has problems. What do we do? Well, Christians aren't really in a powerful position enough to do much of anything. Shield your family. But I would say that because of the content, not because Jewish people are behind it. But I guess if we ever gain power, return to some kind of standards and not just the rating system we currently have. I mean, I would address the immorality that's being caused there. Prefer Christian values. We have to get back to that somehow. But I'm open to ideas on how to do that. But to just rail about, you got to name the problem, without any real solutions except an implied final solution, that's just irresponsible on multiple levels. The application to all of this, regardless of whether it's Jewish people or Hindu people, or I'm talking about different religions here, Muslims, whatever, if you want a Christianized society, if you want to retain Christendom, an Anglo-Protestant society that we've had for years, the main thing that you need to realize is you need to be faithful in your families, faithful in your community, and if you have the opportunity, you need to try to gain power. You need to wield that power for the good of all in your community, understanding what Christ requires of you and applying his law to that particular context, and respecting the Christian traditions that we've been passed down. That's what you need to do. You need to train your children. You want them to be high achievers and be able to compete in upper echelons. You have to be able to make sure they get good educations. You have to train them well. You can't just allow them to just play sports. Sports is great, but you have to give them academic. I mean, look, I've been in these homes, guys. I've been in the homes of many Jewish people who their kids are studying. So I'm telling you that would be the application in my mind, is how do we get influence so that we can be, as Christians, in charge of things like Hollywood, things like our legal system, things like the media, academics, influential fields. That's really the takeaway. And you can get to that point and make that application without ever having to say anything about Jewish people, okay? Or Hindus, or any kind of person, really. Now, should you recognize that there are groups of people that can potentially cause threats? I think so. I think there's certainly areas that I won't go with my family that I think are dangerous, right? I'm recognizing these are regions where certain people live that do not share my understanding of what it means to love your neighbor. And I could be robbed, I could be killed, right? This is common sense. Everyone has this. And it's okay to, I think, notice things. It's okay to notice patterns. What's not okay is to make that, to take that and then make the large leap it takes to make that into a complete ideology that explains every question in life. That's the problem I'm seeing online. And you ask, well, what's the sin there? What's the problem? The problem is you're lying. That's the problem. You're operating, you're adjusting your entire life to conform to a lie. That doesn't make sense of everything. So that's what you have to recognize. I remember I was in New England, in a place, I didn't see Jewish people anywhere, kind of like, you know, rural New England, and driving into a town. And I noticed this was in December. There weren't any Christmas decorations, hardly anything. I saw LGBT stuff everywhere. And I thought, wow, look, this looks iconic. And yet there is no semblance of Christianity left. A lot of the churches are now community centers and things. And there aren't any Jewish people there. And I remember someone told me in a chat group or whatever, they tried to still blame Jewish people for that. Like, it's Jewish people's fault that all these people in small town New England who have lost their Christianity and won't celebrate Christmas, that it's really, it's like these large market forces that, as soon as you start going down this path, guys, you're buying into an ideology, I think. You're not, you can certainly examine conditions, economic conditions, but they're affluent. Like, what are the conditions? What is it that made them want to reject their Christianity, right? And this happened. The whole Unitarian, you know, from congregational to Unitarian thing happened long before there were large groups of Jewish people immigrating. There was very few of them in New England. Most of the Jewish people at that point were in South Carolina, in Charleston, and they were Sephardic. They integrated. You can't find them anymore because they integrated. So that's what I'm talking about. Ideology just like makes that it's the square that you jam into every shape, no matter what shape it is. I was driving through Appalachia recently, and yeah, you got these meth towns, you got these depressed regions where it's like, you know, my brother even tells me, he's down there in Tennessee in the public school system, like, look, these people have lost their culture. Like, well, what did that? Oh, it's Jewish people. Really? Because there aren't many down there. Well, you could try to stretch and, well, they're controlling the education, and the education is not doing okay. Regardless of all of that, something more basic happened, guys, and more important. The parents failed to transfer their own heritage to their children. So their children do not even know the legends of their own land, what happened on their own land. There's a market for meth. People are buying it. What's motivating them to buy it? There's a market for pornography. Why do people watch it who aren't Jewish at all? Is it Jewish people that are forcing them to watch it? You got to think through these things, guys. So it's totally fine to realize that there's an outsized influence of certain groups of people that Jewish people in certain industries. I'm noticing in the tech field, there's a lot of Indian people who are Hindu, right? I mean, I've gone to all these houses. I worked in many counties in New York and Connecticut, North Carolina, South Carolina, like the Tech Triangle. There's a lot of Hindus, guys. I would go into their homes and they all have tech jobs. And I mean, these are people that have a certain kind of influence in that field. And it does affect things. It does affect the culture of your job, your work. Someone not too long ago even was telling me about, like, they were working for this tech company and they basically couldn't have anything explicitly Christian in their signature. You know, this is the kind of thing that produces, because you have all these differing kinds of people who now they get offended by that. And that's not their religion. That's not their belief. And so yeah, these things obviously have impact. You can notice all those things. You can realize all those things, but you have to think practically about this. What are you going to do about it? So if you say something, what's your point? What's your point? Because a lot of people hear some of the over-the-top stuff and they think your point is we need a final solution, right? Is it prudent to say, if you have something to say, why you're going to make yourself a target, even if you say what I'm saying right now can make me a target. Why do that? I have, I guess, the ability to say what I'm saying right now, partially because of the fact that I'm an independent guy. I mean, I can podcast, and I'm also a guy who has ruffled feathers on so many other things in more egregious ways. I wrote a whole book recently, Against the Waves, Christian Order in a Liberal Age, against the liberal order. So, I mean, look, I'm not in the position you're in, though, potentially. You may, if you want power, real power to do the right thing, you have to watch what you say. You have to be prudent. If you have the opportunity to do something good, I think you should take it. But you do not want to be like disqualifying yourself at early stages, which is what a lot of young guys I see doing right now. Your Anon account can be doxxed, guys. Like, you're disqualifying yourself at early stages from ever achieving the kind of power you say you want to do anything about the problems that you think are out there. So you got to use some prudence. You got to think through what the actual threats in front of you are and triage those. And you can't lose connection with your actual community and the people around you, which is what ideology, I think, inevitably ends up doing if you go down that path, because it becomes this obsessive thing. So I wanted to say that. I do have a concern. Obviously, you can hear it in my tone. I do have a concern for guys who have been told their whole lives that, especially young white men, that they're the problem. You've been stripped of your own legends and lore and history. You have been told it's all bad. You don't know. You know more about the Marvel universe than you do your own history in your country. I understand some of these things. I'm not just stereotyping. I know there's obviously exceptions to this, but I know, again, noticing patterns, I can do this too. I know that many have moved around. Many have parents that are divorced. Many have instability and insecurity. And I think it was that, I mean, it was Russell Kirk who said basically, like, look, that's the kind of thing that both communism and fascism, because they're ideologies, feast upon. They come into those contexts and they offer to give you, in a simplistic cartoon form, the kind of fulfillment that you don't get, that you haven't had, that you've been deprived of. You're part of something now. You got an in-group preference now for the group chat that you're in, that's all concerned about the same thing. You have meaning now to your life. You have something to blame and explain why you're in the position you are, where you can't seem to buy a house and you can't seem to get respect, and maybe you can't even seem to attract a wife. It becomes this explainer that just makes sense of everything. And I'm telling you, history's converging forces. It's usually not just one thing that leads to the problems you're in. A lot of the times the reasons are much more immediate than the conspiracy theories that that you know make you think that it's this big universal global scale that that you're contending with. I mean, there are global forces you're contending with, but you still have a lot of power to make choices in your own life. And for some of you, you may be on ground zero. You may be the one that's going to recover these things for your children. But don't pass on to them ideology. Pass on to them something that's rich. Root them into a tradition, even one that you've been denied. Teach them about their faith. Teach them about the area that they're growing up in and the legends in that area, the virtuous people that are from America, from your own country, who you can follow and emulate. So that's just my advice. I think that conforms more to the created order, to how God wants us to live. I think that's what you see in the Old Testament. It is parents that are responsible for teaching, and they do need to remember the things that make them unique, including piles of rocks and unique ways of dress and religion and all this stuff. That needs to be, I think, the focus. You need to recover those things if you've lost those things. And I've seen those things lost. I'm seeing those things completely lost. And, you know, I'll tell you in closing here, I've been told by multiple people over the last year or two that, you know, hey, look, John, this whole fascist thing, I mean, move, if you want to call it that, it's inevitable. All the smart young conservatives are going this direction. And basically, like, try not to upset the apple cart too much. Like, this is just the way it's going to be. And be political, be prudent about it. And I do understand, by the way, if that's the case, I understand that sentiment of like, you can't stop historical forces. I'm not trying to do that. I don't think that that's necessarily even the way it's going to pan out. But if it does, and it would be because the left has succeeded and parents have gone along with, unfortunately, liberal parents, with the left, in trusting leftist institutions and so forth, and they have deracinated their own people. That could very well be the case, and nature abhors a vacuum, something is going to come in. And, you know, white people aren't going to constantly take the place of being the victims, or not the victims, sorry, the culprits in society, and that everything can be blamed on. They're going to lash out, whether it's from knowledge or not. So, you know, even if that is the case, though, I care about these guys. I care about you. I care about the people who get too far into an ideology. There's a guy I know who he went from like being a huge, like, well, not huge, but like he really liked Andrew Tate, right? Andrew Tate was right about everything. Not the most stable guy, right? And then, you know, homosexual within months. And it strikes me, some of the guys that I've seen, and I don't know all of them, obviously, but there are some guys I've seen online who gave me a hard time in 2020, because I know who some of them are, and they were going on the woke train. Some of them didn't think they were half woke or whatever, but they were giving me a hard time. John, you're, you know, basically, they bought into like the liberal critique that I'm somehow defending slavery or something like that, which is ridiculous. But like they were on the woke train, and now they're like, some of them think I need to be red-pilled because I'm not against Jewish people enough or something. Not as vocal as they are, not as concerned, not as, I'm practical, guys. You have to try, and I'm not saying that I'm the template of perfection here, but you got to try to have a holistic view of everything around you. Don't just get into an echo chamber online. And get out, you know, as they say, touch grass, but really look at your communities and assess where the threats are really coming from. And then be practical. What can you do? You can't meet every threat. Sometimes you can't protect your society, but you can protect your family. So make sure that you're focusing on the right things. And I just find it weird that, you know, China all of a sudden isn't a threat. Like China was a huge threat a few years ago. Nothing changed in that regard. But now, you know, they're not talked about as much in the same platforms, right, where they used to be talked about. Muslim terrorists apparently aren't really that much of a threat anymore, right? The threats that haven't changed, that are still there, even to our national security, are being, at least on X, they're being, I would say, ignored, because people are very loud, people are very concerned about Jewish people all of a sudden. And I'm just saying, look at all the threats around you. I think there should be a heart too. I'm probably going too long here. I'm gonna end the podcast, but there should be a heart here for the salvation of those who aren't Christians. Okay. Whether it's Muslim, whether it's Jewish, you can look at even people who are your cultural enemies, and you can say, I don't want them in power. Or, you know, in the case of those who have come here illegally, I want them deported. They need to be not threatening my family, not threatening my society. You can say all those things, and you can still want their salvation. You can still want them to maybe be neutralized and not be a threat, not because something political happened, but because they've come to trust in the Lord Jesus Christ. And they now honor the God that they once hated. I don't see a lot of that spirit out there. And I'm not trying to judge anyone in particular. I understand there's political guys, there's guys who are more wired for evangelism and so forth. But if you're a Christian, you should all, at a basic level, want people who aren't saved to be saved. And there should be a heart there. And if you have seething hatred, you won't have that heart. So some things to think about there. I hope that this landed well and at least helps people ask the right questions about these kinds of things. You know, my heart really does go out to those who have been deracinated and separated from their past and feel unstable. And I know some of the people who are going down this ideological hole, that's where they're at. And it's really for those guys that I even made this video. So if you want me to talk about more of this kind of thing, I mean, I am somewhat capable. I can go down some of these paths. I just don't know that it's all that prudent to go that much deeper into this. We have a tremendous opportunity right now. On the political stage, we have a much better president than we would have had if it was Kamala Harris. And we see some extraordinary things happening. My main concern is that all of this can be happening while Christianity continues to plummet in numbers, while people continue to be separated from their history. Go to any museum, go to any national park and see, you know, Civil War battlefield, what's it all about? It's about slavery. It doesn't matter where the battle was or anything. If you go to, I just was at Thomas Cole's National Historic Site, and it's basically now a feminist anti-American exhibit, half of his house. And they talk about the slaves, which we know hardly anything about, except census information. They talk about them just as much as they talk about Thomas Cole, speculating. It's insane. He's a great American painter, Christian man. They don't even highlight that. They try to make him out to be somewhat of an environmentalist. He really wasn't. He was conservative. He was a Whig, but he would have been a conservative, pro-American guy. And, you know, this is just it's down the street from me, right? This is everywhere. And if we don't do something about this, if we don't regain our heritage, our shared heritage as Americans, guys, it doesn't matter what the Trump administration does. We could seal the border. We could, all these things matter, but you know what I mean? Like you could do all the things, you could, you know, balance the budget. You could even scale back same-sex marriage or something like that. And even if you ended abortion, which are all things I'm for, and you don't take care of this issue, it is a time bomb. And it is the glue that holds us together. It's what confers identity. And you won't have people who want to fight in our wars. They don't care. They won't care about this place if they're so separated from it, or they think there's nothing good in it. You know, we got to look for our heroes even from overseas. It's, you know, Hitler's now a hero somehow. That's crazy to me, but okay, Hitler's now a hero to some of the Gen Z boys. Like, did they not have any actual heroes in their own history that had virtue? or were they just stripped of those things? Got to ask these questions. These are the big questions that I think that I'm asking. Education's a huge thing right now. We got to get that under control. And it's probably going to look like homeschooling for a lot of you. Do whatever you have to do, right, to make that happen. These are the conversations we probably should be having. I think that we're in danger of wasting a lot of manpower and getting distracted on stuff that we, frankly, a lot of it's lies, a lot of it's just not accurate, and a lot of it you can't do anything about anyway. You don't have any power, and even if you did, how are you going to wield it? What are you going to do? So that's just that's my two cents. Hope that you can shoot at me in the comments and let me know what you think. God bless.
The Quarter Pounder with Cheese had many great things. Maple-flavored griddle cakes isn't one of them. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.